Hello, welcome to the first edition of Casting Music and the Wake Word. I'm GT, and this is my friend Kookaburr. Welcome to our podcast. We are a music and spoken word podcast.
Hi, I'm Kookaburr. I do the spoken word portion of this podcast, which is called Wake Words.
And I do the music for the podcast, which is called Casting Music. And together, we're casting music and the Wake Word. So you are listening to an acoustic instrumental version of a song called Raspberry Jam. So this next piece is called One Man Jam.
this passage, "The Thundering Legion Has Stormed Olympus at its End," addresses the disparity between the monotheism of Judaism and the polytheism of the Greek and Roman gods in mythology. And I just, this is a fruit of my cognition surrounding that. So with that, I give you my dissertation on this phrase, "The Thundering Legion Has Stormed Olympus at its End." The phrase that I'd like to speak on today comes, again, as usual, from The Book of the Dark by Jingle Joyce. And the phrase is, "The Thundering Legion Has Stormed Olympus at its End." Now, the Thundering Legion comes from, the name comes from Marcus Aurelius, the emperor. And when the emperor was on an expedition against the Quadi in 174, his army, exhausted by thirst, was on the point of falling an easy prey to the enemy. It was then that the soldiers of the 12th Legion, which was composed of Christians, prayed to their God for help. Forthwith, a heavy thunderstorm arose, bringing the desired relief to the Romans, but terrifying and dispersing the barbarians. Hereupon, the emperor issued a decree forbidding the persecution of the Christians, and to the 12th Legion he gave the surname of Fulminata or Fulminea, that meaning thundering. Now again, the phrase I'd like to discuss is from The Book of the Dark, "The Thundering Legion Has Stormed Olympus at its End." This is a metaphor that the Thundering Legion or Christianity has stormed Mount Olympus so that the gods thereof shall no longer hold sway over the souls of men. The first thing that comes to mind when thinking of the denizens of Mount Olympus, especially the chief of the gods, Deus or Zeus, is fickleness. Whereas the Thundering Legion represented a god who was faithful, who inspired Luther to enthuse sola fides or faith alone. Zeus, nevertheless, can be tout à fait charmant or completely charming. Look at all the Lavinias that he bedded. But he could also be a cad. For instance, when wooing his bride Hera during the Trojan War, he enumerated all the times he committed Deuteronomy on her, as it were. But of course, he was being led by the nose, as Hera wanted to distract him from the melee of the battle so that the Greeks could get the upper hand. Her sister Aphrodite made her somewhat attrayente or attractive to him at the time. But he did show his prurient polygamous inattentions. And indeed, he did enumerate the times that he was unfaithful to her. For inkstands, the time that he had Ixion's wife, or there was Alcmene, who gave birth to Heracles, lion-hearted Heracles. And then there was Leto of the lustrous braids, who gave birth to Artemis and Apollo. And the list goes on. And then there was the times when he metamorphosed, like, for instance, Leda and the swan, when he took the form of a swan and overcame Leda. Habes timidum quellum et signum. That's Latin for "you have the timid maiden and the swan." Or Europa and the bull. Iterum timida puella est tibi et hoc tempus torus periculosus. That's Latin for "you have the timid maid again, and this time the dangerous bull." Although this dangerous bull happened to seduce the maiden. But in Christianity, the God of the Christians never takes the form of an animal. Unless you include the time when Balaam's ass spoke with the voice of Yahweh. Other than that, there's a time in the Bible when Yahweh spoke through the burning bush. But what ends with Mount Olympus is the multiplicity of the gods, all their wills and wants, and again, Hera against Zeus, or Aphrodite and Hera and Athena gagging each other over the apple of Paris, or Poseidon and Athena fighting over the city of Athens. No, man is no longer overpowered carnally by the demiurge. Or for that matter, woman is no longer overpowered carnally by the demiurge. And this kind of behavior is an abomination, especially to these modern times with the Me Too movement. For instance, when Phoebus chases Daphne through the woods, or Pan chases Syrinx. These things are an abomination. And one might wonder that the behavior of the denizens of Mount Olympus, especially the males, might have give sanction to the licentiousness of Europe and America and the Los Angeles. But to whereby hangs our tales. Our tale is German for judgment. But there is an overcoming onesomeness in the holy and undivided, the Trinity, finds spore in the land. But there's something sacred about this mythologizing and this anthropomorphism that is adumbrated by the Thundering Legion. For instance, Bacchus and Philemon, this old couple who lived in an izba. Izba is Russian for cottage. And Zeus and Hermes visited them disguised as paupers. But Bacchus and Philemon were guest friendly to them and fed them despite their meager supplies. And because they were Eusebian or pious, the gods rewarded them by turning their izba into a temple. And when they passed, the gods made each of them into a dendron or tree to guard the portal of the temple. This shows the fullness of creation that the Greeks perceived. Another example, to use Phoebus again, when Phoebus was chasing Daphne through the woods, Daphne, in order to elude the Gaelish gall of the god, appealed to her father, the god of the river, to change her shape, and she changed into a mountain laurel, which laurel is used to mark the victor in the games. And again, this shows that to the Greeks, creation was alive. There was an animism that obtained. Now all we have is Deus, the zero hour of our eyesore. And Deus is Greek for Zeus, but it's Latin for day. And you might say Deus is Dormanus Master and Commandant Illy Tonobras. That is, Zeus is the Lord of Sleep and commands the Illy Thunderousness. And Olim is gone in the place of this futile pre-deriding unstant, the forgiveness of the Igon Black, the stigma, the moment. But at the same time, I'm reminded of something Newman said, that God takes a saint as he is and uses him against himself. And the same could be said of the denizens of Mount Olympus. But what I really want to talk about, actually, is Vico, the linguistic Viconian theory that the Greek heroic language becomes the Latin quotidian language, and how this displays itself with the word olim. Olim means once upon a time in Latin. And this applies to this phrase, the Thundering Legion has stormed Olymp at an end. Because surely that's what Shem meant when he uses the word Olymp. He doesn't say Olympus, he says Olymp. So he's surely glossing on the Latin word Olim. So does he mean that the thundering, that the once upon a time of Mount Olympus ends? Does he mean once upon a time must ends? The past tense must ends? I think he means the thundering legion of, I mean, I think he means the once upon a time of Mount Olympus ends. In particular, the deification of faithlessness and lasciviousness ends. And that's the Olim that he means. But there is a greater Olim that Shem invokes, namely the homely Olim of all man that circumscribes Greek mythology. Shem invokes mood-molded, cycle-wheeling, merry-voicing history, history writ large, world history, keeping Grek at the center, Grek being the Russian word for sin, like the Greek, but dethroned. And the opposite of sin is not virtue, but faith. We must infuse Mount Olympus with faith. And remember that this communion of sense includes these gods and goddesses. Got by the one goat, suckled by the same Nana, one twitch, one nature makes us old world kin. Each man of us is like Zeus, born on a Mount Ida in a cave of kids. The goat, which is, the kid is a baby goat, and the goat implies carnality. One is born spiritually when one dies to the flesh carnally. Mount Olympus sort of represents the ascetic sphere of Kierkegaard. Christianity represents the ethical and religious sphere. When one has chosen an ethical way of life, one can dabble in the aesthetic, but one must have their ethical rock to depend on. But that light of Deus, or Zeus, shines over all of Europe, even in the Dark Ages, and he still shines today. Zealous Zeus, the Omegistus, the son of a prince, the son of the Messiah. So zwelf me Zeus. And I'll pass with that.